When people think about feeding themselves off the land, hunting usually comes to mind first. A deer or a wild hog can fill a freezer fast, and there is real value in that. But hunting has a hidden cost that does not show up until you run the numbers. It burns calories. It demands daylight. It requires you to be present, moving, and focused, often for hours, with no guarantee of a return. In a situation where every calorie counts and your time is stretched thin, that math does not always work in your favor. Fishing tells a different story. A set line does not sleep. A trap does not need you to sit and wait. A net left in the right spot keeps working while you split firewood, tend a garden, or catch a few hours of rest. This is what makes fishing arguably the most efficient wild food source available to a self-reliant household. The water does the work around the clock, and you simply tend to it between other chores. This article treats fishing as a food procurement discipline, not a weekend hobby. There is no trophy here, no bragging rights. The goal is protein on the table, reliably, again and again. Fishing is a hub with many skills beneath it, and competence in those skills comes from practice built long before you ever have to depend on it. We will walk the full path from water to plate at a high level, keep legality and safety in view the whole way, and point you toward the deeper guides where the hands-on detail lives, where you fish shapes everything that follows. Before you tie a single knot or set a single line, you need to understand one thing: the water you fish decides everything else. The environment dictates your methods, your gear, the species you can target, and what you can realistically expect to bring home. Two households can own the exact same equipment and get completely different results simply because one lives beside a slow farm pond and the other beside a coastal inlet. The most useful thing you can do is look at the water nearest to you and start thinking of it as a dependable food source. That is the water you will come to know best, the water you can reach quickly, and the water you can tend without burning a full day traveling. Distant fishing spots are a luxury. The pond down the road is a pantry. Moving water versus still water. Rivers and streams are moving water. The current shapes where fish hold, where they feed, and how your gear behaves once it is in the water. Fish in moving water often sit behind rocks, in eddies, or along seams where fast water meets slow water, waiting for the current to bring food to them. Set lines and trot lines can work well here because the water itself keeps bait moving and scent flowing. But current also puts stress on your gear, so anchoring and placement matter more than they would in a calm setting. Still water, meaning lakes and ponds, plays by different rules. Without current, fish move to find food and comfort rather than letting the water bring it to them. They relate to structure like drop-offs, weed beds, sunken timber, and shaded banks. Passive gear in still water depends more on knowing where fish travel and gather, since nothing is pushing them past your bait. The upside is that still water is often easier to work with limited equipment and easier to fish safely. Freshwater versus saltwater and coastal settings. Freshwater covers most inland rivers, lakes, and ponds, and it is where many self-reliant households will do the bulk of their fishing. The species there, such as catfish, bass, panfish, and trout, respond to methods that most people can build and manage on their own. Saltwater and coastal fishing open up a larger and often more abundant food supply, but they raise the difficulty. Tides move on a schedule you must learn. Gear corrodes faster and needs heavier construction. Species vary widely by region, and some carry rules that are stricter than freshwater. Coastal environments can also be more dangerous, with stronger currents, changing weather, and unstable footing. The point is not to master every environment at once. It is to know your water, learn its habits, and turn it into reliable protein. Deeper environment-specific guides cover each of these settings in detail, and they are worth studying once you know which water is truly yours to depend on. Methods across the effort spectrum. Fishing methods fall along a spectrum that runs from active to passive. Understanding where each method sits on that spectrum is the heart of thinking about fishing as food procurement rather than sport. In a survival context, the methods that require the least of your attention while still producing food are usually the most valuable, because your time and energy are needed elsewhere. Active methods, rod and line. Rod and line fishing is the method most people know. You cast, you wait, you react, and you reel in. It is engaging, it gives you precise control, and it is excellent for learning how fish behave. But it has the same weakness as hunting. It requires you to be there, hands on the gear, spending your time and focus to catch each fish. As a way to relax or to target a specific fish, it is fine. As your primary food strategy when 100 other tasks are pulling at you, it is inefficient. Passive methods, the high return core. This is where fishing earns its place as the most efficient wild food source. Passive gear works while you do not. Set lines are single baited lines anchored and left in place. You bait them, secure them, and check them on a schedule. Between checks, they fish for you. Trot lines take that idea further. A trot line is a heavy main line stretched across a stretch of water with many baited hooks hanging from it at intervals. One trot line can fish dozens of hooks at once, all day and all night, from a single setup. For putting protein on the table with minimal ongoing effort, few methods beat a well-placed trot line. Nets, where legal, harvest fish in volume without any bait or waiting on your part. Set in the right location, a net can gather a meaningful amount of food in a single soak. Traps, including funnel-style fish traps and basket designs, use the fish's own movement against it. A fish swims in easily and cannot find its way back out. Traps require almost no attention once placed and can be built from a variety of materials. This is the calorie math in action. When you cannot afford to spend the day at the water's edge, passive gear lets the water keep working for you around the clock. You invest energy once to set it, then simply tend it between other tasks. That return on effort is exactly what a self-reliant household needs. Improvised tackle. Manufactured hooks, line, and nets will not always be available. Knowing how to improvise tackle turns a shortage into an inconvenience rather than a crisis. Hooks can be fashioned from bone, thorns, wire, or bent metal. Line can be made from strong natural cordage or salvaged material. Traps and nets can be woven from available fibers or built from scavenged fencing and containers. These skills are worth practicing now, while the stakes are low, so that improvised gear is second nature if you ever need it. The Survival Fishing Basics Guide and the Individual Method Guides cover the hands-on steps for building and setting each of these, including knots, anchoring, bait selection, and legal placement. Study them and practice before you need them. The emphasis throughout is efficiency and reliability, not the thrill of the catch, reading the water and understanding fish. Gear alone does not catch fish. You can own the best trot line and the strongest net and still come up empty if you set them in the wrong place. The knowledge that separates a productive spot from a wasted afternoon is the ability to read the water and understand how fish live. This skill multiplies the return on every passive method you use. Reading water features. Water tells you where fish are likely to be if you learn to read it. In rivers, look for seams where fast and slow water meet, deep pools below rapids, undercut banks, and the calm water behind rocks and logs. Fish hold in these spots to rest and to wait for food. In lakes and ponds, look for structures such as drop-offs, submerged trees, weed lines, points of land extending into the water, and shaded areas during hot weather. Fish gather where structure gives them cover and access to food. When you place a set line or a trap near where fish already hold and travel, you are working with their natural behavior instead of against it. That is the difference between gear that produces and gear that just sits. Understanding fish behavior and feeding. Fish feed on a schedule shaped by light, temperature, and food availability. Many species feed most actively at dawn and dusk. Others feed heavily after dark, which is one reason overnight set lines and trot lines can be so productive. Water temperature drives fish to move shallow or deep, and it changes how aggressively they feed. Knowing when your target species is most likely to be feeding lets you time your bait and your checks for the best return. How seasons change the picture. Seasons shift where and when fish are catchable. In spring, many fish move shallow to spawn and become easier to reach. Summer heat can push them deep or into shaded, cooler water. Fall often triggers heavy feeding as fish build up reserves before winter. Cold water in winter slows fish down, changing both where they hold and how much they eat. A method that fills a line in spring may need to be moved deeper or set differently in the heat of summer. You do not need to memorize every detail at once. You need to observe your own water across the year and learn its patterns. That local knowledge, built over time, is what makes every piece of gear you own more effective. Deeper spokes cover species behavior and seasonal patterns in detail, and they are the natural next step once you know your water, from catch to table and beyond. Landing a fish is only part of the job. A fish on the bank is not yet a meal. What you do in the minutes and hours after the catch decides whether the protein makes it to the table in good condition or spoils and goes to waste. Cleaning, gutting, and handling. Fish begin to spoil quickly, especially in warm weather. The first priority is keeping the catch cool and handling it properly. Gutting removes the internal organs, which spoil fastest and can taint the meat if left in place. From there, you can scale and cook a fish whole or fillet it to separate the usable meat from the bones and skin. Filleting takes practice, but it yields clean, ready to cook or ready to preserve portions. Clean tools, clean hands, and clean water matter at every step, because careless handling can introduce bacteria that make you sick. Detailed guides walk through each of these steps so you can build the skill before you rely on it. Handing off to preservation and storage. When you catch more than you can eat right away, and passive gear often means you will, preservation turns a surplus into a reserve. This is where fishing connects directly to the preservation pillar. Drying, salting, and smoking are proven ways to keep fish usable long after the catch, without refrigeration. Once preserved, that fish flows into your storage plan alongside the rest of your food reserves. A single productive trot line, cleaned and preserved properly, can feed a household for far longer than the day it was caught. The preservation and storage guides cover the methods and the safe handling that make this possible. Legality and safety throughout. Legality and safety are not afterthoughts. They run through every part of fishing. Fishing licenses, catch limits, size limits, seasons, and rules about which methods are legal vary by location and change over time. Some passive methods like nets and trot lines are restricted or banned in certain areas, and using them illegally can bring serious penalties. Knowing the rules where you fish is part of doing this responsibly, and detailed guides cover how to find and understand them. Safety matters just as much. Water is dangerous. Currents, cold, slippery footing, and unstable ice all cause real harm every year. Handling safety matters too, since spoiled fish and poor cleaning practices can make you ill. Do not gloss over either one. Learn the rules, respect the water, and handle your catch with care. Fishing among its sibling pillars. Fishing does not stand alone. It is the wild harvest counterpart to hunting and foraging, the three pillars that gather food from the land and water rather than from a cultivated garden. Together with a garden and a solid storage plan, they form a complete approach to feeding yourself without depending on a store. Fishing's advantage among them is that quiet efficiency, the way it keeps working while you attend to everything else. The deeper spokes beneath this hub are your next step, where the hands-on detail turns this overview into real, practice skill. Fishing rewards those who prepare before they need it. The calorie math is simple. Passive gear harvests around the clock while you handle everything else, making it one of the most efficient wild food sources a household can build. But gear alone catches nothing. Reading the water, understanding fish, handling your catch cleanly, and respecting the rules all matter just as much as a well-tied line. Start with the water nearest you. Learn it across the seasons. Practice the methods and the cleaning now, while the stakes are low. Then follow the deeper guides beneath this hub to turn a general understanding into dependable skill. The goal was never a trophy. It was reliable protein on the table, day after day.